When Josias originally asked me to take 1 week of the Sermon on the Mount series, I thought I would pick the passage that I have reflected on the most in the past, which was the bit about turning the other cheek and nonviolence that we heard a few weeks ago. But then I saw that he lined up Greg Boyd for that, and there was no way I was going to interfere with that. So I thought, okay, well, what's like the one I've maybe thought about second most? And I landed on the passage about judgment, which we'll be looking at today, Matthew 7:1-6. Unfortunately, I'm familiar with that passage for a little bit of a less flattering reason. The nonviolence passage I'm familiar with because, as many of you know, I write about politics for a living and especially foreign policy, and so I think about sort of those principles when I'm writing about things that typically don't have a lot of nonviolence going on. Whereas with the judgment passage, I've thought about that in the past because I'm pretty judgmental. And I mention that to get to sort of the classic sermon cliche of any advice that I give is at least as much for myself as for anyone here. So with that said, if we can go to the verse itself, here we go. So Jesus is continuing to preach and he says, "Do not judge or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give to dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." So, and we can move on to the next slide. The first part that I want to address is sort of an issue of categories, which is to say, what exactly is Jesus talking about when he speaks about judgment here, and what sorts of judgment is he prohibiting? Is it just a blanket ban on all kinds of judgment? I don't think it can be a total ban on using our critical faculties for a couple of reasons. The first one is it's not really possible to think without employing some judgment. We naturally sort things into categories of things we like and dislike, and we can't really stop ourselves from doing that, nor could we really function if we did. And then the second reason is that later in this very chapter, in verses we'll get to in the next week or two, Jesus actually asks us to use some sort of judgment, or we could say discernment, if we want to sort of verbally distinguish. And that's the verses where he talks about how a good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. And so by people's fruit, by the manner of their lives, we'll be able to recognize if they're followers of Jesus or not. So it can't be all judgment that he's prohibiting here. And so to help us further sort of narrow down on what's at hand, I want to make two distinctions: people versus things, and inside versus outside. And what those mean will become more clear in a moment. Well, the first one, people versus things, is pretty simple. Jesus is clearly talking about people and their behavior and character as the subject of our judgment. He's not saying we can't have opinions about movies or policies or food or what have you. So if I say, there's a bill going through Congress right now and it's really bad and it shouldn't be passed, I'm judging that bill, but I don't think I'm running afoul of what Jesus is prohibiting here. Because it's a bill, it's not a person. The second one, the inside versus outside distinction, is a little bit more complicated. And for that, I want to turn to an example from politics, actually, that I think helps sort of concretely clarify what this means. So this goes back to 1964, when Barry Goldwater was running for president on the Republican ticket. And Goldwater was a very polarizing guy. He barely won any states. It was a deeply lopsided election. And because he was such a character given to very dramatic rhetoric, there was a magazine that opposed him. And they sent out a letter to thousands of psychiatrists and said, like, "Hey, do you think this guy's mentally fit to be president?" And about 1,000 of the psychiatrists replied, and they said, "No, he's not mentally fit to be president. He's crazy," even though they'd never met him in person. Well, after that, the American Psychiatric Association implemented what is literally called the Goldwater Rule. And it prohibits licensed psychiatrists from diagnosing public figures whom they've never treated. And so it says if a member of the press comes to you and says, you know, do you think this guy's crazy, whether it be a politician or a celebrity or what have you, you can offer sort of your general psychiatric expertise, but it is unethical for the psychiatrist to offer a professional opinion on a specific person unless he or she has conducted an examination and has been granted proper authorization for such a statement. So I bring this up because I think it provides a really good illustration of what I mean by the inside versus outside distinction, which is to say, are you on the inside or outside of someone's life? So it's unethical for psychiatrists to assess public figures they haven't met because they're only seeing this person's public image filtered through through the media, through their public representation, and that's always going to be a partial image that doesn't reveal the person's intentions or history or extenuating circumstances that might contribute to why they're behaving the way that they do. And so likewise, when we judge people with whom we aren't in relationship, when we judge people from the outside of their lives, we too don't know their intentions and circumstances and history. We're also offering an assessment without permission or invitation. And so judging people from the outside of their lives with that same sort of filtered, partial information can never be acceptable. It can never be fair. And that sort of judgment, I think, is being completely prohibited by what Jesus is saying here. It's also just not our job. In fact, even though relationship does make a difference, and I'll say more on that in a little bit here, ultimately only God has all of the information. And so that's a big part of why judgment is his prerogative and not ours. So when I was looking into this, I came across a commentary from St. Augustine on the Sermon on the Mount, and he's not the early theologian I would normally go to, but it was really worth reading, and he actually makes this same sort of distinction. And so he says that there are two things in which we ought not to make rash or unfair judgments. One is when we don't know with what intention something is done, and one is when we don't know what sort of person the person we're judging is going to be. And so he says, let us not therefore reprove those things about which we do not know with what intention they are done, nor let us so reprove those things which are manifest as that we should despair of a return to a right state of mind. So he's saying, don't be like the unethical psychiatrist, judging someone who hasn't invited you on the inside of their life and their intentions and their history. But he's also saying that even if you have proof that there is real sin going on, that there's something to be judged here, it's still not okay to sort of play final arbiter and write somebody off as someone beyond redemption, just a lost cause, whom we can judge instead of trying to help. Because we still don't know what God can do with them, and it's never our business to be deciding the state or fate of someone's soul. So Augustine gives an example that's actually relevant to Josias' sermon on fasting from a few weeks ago. And he says, basically, if you have a friend who says, I can't fast because of health issues in my stomach, and you know, I just can't do it, and you're like, no, 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 this guy's lying, he's just a glutton and wants to keep eating, that's unfair, and you can't pass that judgment on them. And then he says, okay, but even if you find out that they really are a glutton and they are lying to you, you administer reproof to them as if they could never be amended and changed, then once again, you have judged rashly. So we can never judge people when we're not on the inside of their lives, and we can never set ourselves up as the ultimate judge, saying some people are too bad to help. But does that mean it's never appropriate to go to someone and say, hey, I've observed this thing happening in your life, and I don't think it's a good development, and I'm worried about you? So I would suggest that the broader testimony of Scripture, and even Jesus' teaching specifically, indicates that sometimes it will be appropriate to go to someone in that manner, and that doesn't run afoul of what Jesus is saying here in the Sermon on the Mount. And there are a lot of passages we could look at to demonstrate this point, but these three were short, so that's why I have them here. One of them is Matthew 18:15, and this is Jesus speaking. This is part of a longer passage on church discipline. And he says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. And he continues to spell out a further process for if they don't listen to you on that first private meeting. And then when Paul is writing to the Corinthians, he's again talking about dealing with sin within your church community. And he says, what business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside? And of course, when he says judge there, he's not saying, you know, just go around casting these unfair judgments without knowledge of people's intentions. But he is clearly indicating that there will be, in this community context, some assessment of other people's lives and speaking to them about that. And then likewise, again, when Paul is writing to the Galatians, he says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. So again, it's this idea that you would be going to people and confronting them when you observe something going awry in their life. And so what's consistent in all of these verses, as well as in Matthew 7, is that it's always about confronting someone with whom you have a close covenant relationship. So when Jesus gives the speck and plank example, he says we're looking in a brother's eye, not just some random person's eye. So last week, if you were here, Third Way did our theoretically annual covenant renewal ceremony in which new members joined Third Way and old members renewed their commitment to our church covenant. And one part of that covenant, at the very end, it says, as community members, we invite one another to lovingly challenge and encourage us to remain faithful to our covenant and to Jesus' kingdom way of life. And that's really what is being talked about here, this idea of speaking to people within this specific context. So if we're dealing with our own sin, which is to say not being hypocrites and going around with planks in our eyes, confronting people about specks, there will be circumstances in the context of covenant relationship where it is appropriate and loving to bring up someone else's speck. But again, this is always going to be a brother's eye, not a stranger. So the next part I want to look at is the pearls before swine line, which there's some debate about whether this is sort of its own separate thing or if it should be read as part of the teaching on judgment. I decided to go with tying it to the teaching on judgment, though there are persuasive cases that it's separate and just that was where it was recorded. So to read it again, it was the part that said, do not give dogs what is sacred, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. So this sounds super harsh in the first century context, because dogs and pigs were not animals that you touched and cuddled the way dogs especially are today. And in fact, it almost sounds, if we are hearing it right after the judgment passage, like Jesus is reversing what he just said and saying we can categorize some people and just write them off as swine and vermin that you don't deal with and don't tell them your good stuff. The better explanation, I think, is that he's communicating something not about the people themselves as a separate category, but about what they're able to receive as a result of our current relationship with them or lack thereof. So I think the meaning of the image here is in the contrast. A dog or a pig can't appreciate a pearl. And we can understand this even though we like dogs now. So it would be silly, for instance, to give my dogs Abby and Moses a pearl collar, because they would not appreciate it any more than a plain collar, and they would also probably ruin it. And so again, a lot of this is about relational context. It's not that some people are just dogs and we get to write them off. It's that without a certain closeness of relationship, offering your unrequested assessment of someone else's life is real unlikely to go well. And not only will it be a waste because they'll probably be too offended to benefit from our input, even if it's correct, but it might actually be destructive of any relationship that could otherwise develop. And so that, I would suggest, is what the part about the dogs and the pigs turning and tearing and biting you is about. One commentator put it this way, the last clause indicates that the saying is aimed not only at keeping sacred and precious things safe from misuse, but also more prudentially at the disciples' own safety. Those who fail to exercise a proper discrimination in when to speak and when to keep silent are liable to get hurt themselves. Whether that be probably not literally physically hurt, although maybe sometimes, but probably in damage to that relationship. So I've saved for last what I would say is sort of the most difficult bit, this idea that if you judge unfairly, you will also be judged. And what makes this tricky is that Jesus uses a passive phrasing, which means that he never specifies who is doing that second round of judging. And we sort of assume it's God because there's other phrases in the Sermon on the Mount with a similar like sentence structure where it clearly is God. So for instance, later in this chapter, it says, ask and it will be given unto you. Well, God is the one doing the giving there, even though it's not specified that God is that it's God. But here, it's not necessarily the easiest interpretation to say that God is doing that second round of judgment. And Augustine actually brings up this problem. He says, is it the case then that if we judge anything with a rash judgment, God will also judge rashly with respect to us? Or if we shall measure anything with an unjust measure, is there also with God an unjust measure, according to which it shall be measured to us again? So basically, if we're unfairly judging other people, is God going to be unjust towards us, sort of like as a vindictive payback? Because that would seem to be what's going on if we're reading it as God is the one judging the unfair judge. And there's actually a lot of disagreement among theologians about who is doing the judgment here, and I came upon roughly three options for who it could be. The first one is God, and the idea is that it's only fair that God would apply the same measure to us that we apply to others. And he has a particular reason to be angry with us for trying to usurp his role as judge. It is rightfully his job, and so not only are we sinning against other people, right, but we're sinning against God more specifically by trying to take his responsibility for ourselves. The second possibility is that it's other people who are judging us. And so one commentator says, explains it as, the critic who is blind to his or her own failings is living in a make-believe world where one can exempt oneself from standards to which others are expected to conform. Society will not tolerate that, and still less can the disciple community afford to operate by such double standards. It is the recipe for breakdown of relationships. And that's pretty convincing as well, right? Hypocrisy, nobody enjoys that. The third option is a little bit more nuanced, and this is this idea that sin sort of brings with itself its own corruption, which is to say that the judgment that's coming upon the person who's judging unfairly is not like God actively judging you or others actively judging you, but just that the way the world works, when you engage in judgment, you bring judgment upon yourself. Just by the act of your sin, it has its own consequences in your heart and in your character. And this is actually the option that Augustine goes for. So he says, God is not going to be judging unfairly, like God wouldn't be unjust. But actually, the same rashness with which you punish other people must necessarily punish yourself. Unless, perchance, it is to be imagined that injustice does harm in some way to him against whom it goes forth, but in no way to him from whom it goes forth. But no, it often does no harm to him who suffers the injury, but it must necessarily do harm to him who inflicts it. So in other words, me thinking an unjust judgment about someone will probably never directly hurt them. They may never even know that they were judged, but it will still be able to hurt me. So even if I say it to them, it might not hurt them, right? Because they could write it off as, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. But it will still, but my act of judging will still affect my own character and spiritual state. So personally, I'm inclined to say that Jesus uses the passive voice here on purpose, that he wants to leave this sort of ambiguity because there's some truth in all three of these attributions. I do think Augustine is right that God isn't being vindictive and petty and unjust. But when we judge people on the outside, people with whom we don't have a relationship where discernment and intervention is appropriate, we are usurping God's role as judge, and he's not going to be pleased with that for the sake of everyone involved, including us for the effect that it has on our own character. And of course, it also makes sense that it would be about other people, too. No one likes hypocrisy, and if we hold other people to a higher standard than we hold ourselves, eventually they're going to figure it out and judge us in return. But I think it is also just about the way the world is structured, and sinning against other people corrupts and hurts us maybe even more than them. There's a passage in Psalms that communicates this really well. It says, whoever is pregnant with evil conceives trouble and gives birth to disillusionment. Whoever digs a hole and scoops it out falls into the pit they have made. The trouble they cause recoils on them. Their violence comes down on their own head. And so in the same way, if I only have the judgment in my own mind, just it's sort of festering there is going to have a corrupting effect, an effect of judgment on me. Though no one else may be aware that it ever happened. So how do we know when we are judging unfairly? The people versus things distinction, I think, is pretty clear. But the inside versus outside distinction is often messier, especially if we have close relationships with people, as we all do, outside of the sort of explicit covenant community context like Third Way, where we've said to one another, you know, I invite your input into my life. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any magic formula for this. For instance, I recently confronted a good friend about some negative patterns I saw developing in their life, and because this person doesn't live here, I couldn't do it in person. So I sent them an email, and as I was hitting a send, I was about 95% sure that this was the right thing to do, that I wasn't going after someone else's spec with a log in my eye, and that our relationship was such that my friend would be able to receive this. But there was still a solid 5% of me that was wondering, is my assessment wrong, and is this going to be just the end of our friendship? And so I'd prayed about the situation and the content of my letter, and I had a lot of good reasons to think that I was making the right decision, but I couldn't be certain. And honestly, that was probably more clear-cut than most of the scenarios in which we find ourselves. There are also going to be situations in which we have some sort of partial relationship, where some types of judgment are invited, but sometimes aren't. So for example, if you're an employer or a supervisor with employees, your employees have invited your judgment about their work performance, but probably not about their personal lives. In other cases, you might be close enough where assessing your coworkers' personal choices is appropriate. It's not always going to be a very black and white thing where we can place people in neat categories of open for discernment and keep your mouth shut. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning, I am pretty judgmental, and I'm nowhere near as good as I should be about making this distinction. So, from personal experience, I can say that rationalizing unfair judgment as perfectly fair discernment can itself very easily become a plank in our eyes. It's very easy to make excuses for why a certain act of judgment is actually okay. So there are three things that help me at least sometimes steer clear of that. The first one is the Goldwater Rule. And basically what I think that boils down to here is, if you'd have trouble receiving an out-of-the-blue, uninvited assessment from someone because you don't think they know you well enough to give it, then they probably would have the same trouble receiving it from you. The second thing is, we can ask ourselves whether the problem or sin we think we've observed is something we feel compelled to actually mention to this person. Because notice, even if we get the okay to assess something in another person's lives, in all of those passages we looked at that describes that happening, so even if we have the right relationship and we're not being hypocritical, Scripture is always picturing us talking to them about it. So a judgment I'm just thinking in my own head will never pass muster. Now, obviously, we want to think things over before we bring them up to someone, but if all I ever do is think about it, I'm not doing anything to help them. I'm basically just gossiping with myself. So if I'd never sent that email to my friend and instead just sat around thinking about how much they'd screwed up, I would have been unquestionably in the wrong. And even if I'd begun thinking about this with the best of intentions, eventually I suspect it would have evolved into thinking about how much better I am for not screwing up the same way, and then into feeding my own ego or falsely bolstering my own sense of worth at my friend's expense. And the third thing is prayer. God knows whether it's appropriate for us to be thinking about someone else and their behavior. He knows whether we have the right relationship to be assessing someone else's life. Of course, there are still no guarantees. Even if you do have a good enough relationship, someone could react poorly and cut you out of their life. But still, I think prayer is a necessary step for determining whether we're judging unfairly, whether we're being hypocritical by our own standards, and whether we're throwing pearls before swine. And so now Terry is going to come up and lead us in a reflection to think about ways we may be judging. Actually, I don't know exactly what she's doing, so I'll leave that to her.
Okay, so ever since Bonnie and Josias asked me to do a little reflection after this, I've been thinking about judgment, and kind of what I've been focusing on is how good it feels to judge. I mean, you know, you have to take that into account when you're thinking about judgment, because it's a way of justifying ourselves and feeling better in some ways. And so, and what I also know is that it's almost impossible to just focus on not doing something, especially when it feels so good, right? So if all we're thinking about is, oh, I can't judge, but it feels really good to do that, That's not going to be actually very helpful. So we have to have something that we do instead of judging, and something that we do actively. And so I want to lead us in sort of a meditation on how to bless people when we're noticing that we've fallen into judgment. And that's a really challenging thing to do. So as Bonnie was talking, I wonder if there was somebody you had in mind where you're like, am I doing that? Am I judging them? And so what I want you to do, I'm going to do a meditation to help you think that through and be able to bless that person. And so if you want to close your eyes for this meditation, if that helps you to focus, you can do that. Or if you're actually more resourceful and reflective, if you keep your eyes open, that's fine too. So I want you to start out by picturing this person as vividly as you can, this person who maybe you've been struggling with judgments about them. And the first thing I want you to do is notice any feelings or thoughts that you have about that person as you picture them. And just let those feelings and thoughts kind of come and go. Don't try to push them away. Don't get all caught up in them. So just let them be what they are. And now, in the company of your thoughts and your feelings, I want you to the best of your ability, pray blessings on that person as an act of obedience. Pray for God's light and healing and goodness. Agree with God that this person has infinite worth. Invite the Holy Spirit to give you wisdom and the ability to see this person the way God sees that person. Try to stay open to any promptings from the Holy Spirit as you're doing this. Lord, bless us as we learn to bless others when it is most difficult to do so. Share your heart with us as we resist the urge to judge in ways that are harmful to others and to ourselves. And help us to know what love looks like in every moment. Amen.